And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live in the world. And certainly this program is important, as I always say, for all people. The principles that we advance here at DavidDuke.com and the David Duke Report, my monthly political commentary and newsletter, are principles that we believe are good for the European people, but are also good for all people. Every heritage has the right to preserve its own heritage, its own values, its own traditions, its own language, and certainly its own freedom. I don't believe that any nation should be controlled by any other nation. I believe that no people should be controlled by any other people. I reject any sort of racial hatred or any sort of racial supremacism or any sort of supremacism of one people over another. I do believe in the right of all people to exist and to preserve and protect their own way of life. I also believe that there's an incredible hypocrisy going on in the world today, that there is a very racial supremacist, in fact, religion that masquerades as a, quote, universal religion. It is a religion that is based on racial purity and racial dominance. It is the religion that's referred to commonly as Judaism. Now, this doesn't mean that every Jew or every person who practices Judaism is a supremacist, but the roots of the religion are very strongly supremacist in many, many ways, but you really can't talk about it today. I got a letter just the other day from a junior at UCLA, that's the University of the United States, for those people who don't know around the world who listen to my broadcast, and I'd like to share that letter with you and my response to the letter. And this illustrates, I believe, the hypocrisy that we have in the Western world regarding Zionism and Judaism and Jewish extremism. So let me give the letter to you now, and then I'll give you my response. Dear Dr. Duke, I'm currently a junior at UCLA, and I'm also a great and interested fan of your website, books, and general work for a more fair, free, and peaceful world. I'm truly glad that you were able to expose Wolf Blitzer on CNN as being a former lobbyist for AIPAC. And the fact is, Israel is getting $3 billion a year in foreign aid from the United States. Thank you so much for your knowledge and honesty. I, like you, do not hate Judaism, which has been around for over 2,000 years. I hate Zionism, which is only about 200 years old. I believe that Jimmy Carter's new book is honest and extremely factual. Many Zionists and ignorant people have called him an anti-Semite. But that is a very stupid statement. The fact is that Jimmy Carter established the first peaceful treaty between Israel and Egypt, and not one word of it has been broken, and it has been in effect for almost 30 years. I believe that we have a separation of church and state in America, but what we need is a separation of Jewish extremists and state. One question I have for you is that, do we still have our traditional Christmas tree in the White House? I never see it anymore. I am also providing some interesting pictures for you. I hope you will read this email and respond as well. Thank you once again for your work for truth and justice, and I hope you had a wonderful Christmas and Happy New Year. Oh, darn, wait. Can I still say Christmas in emails without going to jail? And that's from Alan. Well, Alan, thank you very much for your letter, and I'm going to give you the response. And I also shared this response with the people who read and listen to DavidDuke.com. And I also wish you, and I wish everyone here, a Happy New Year. And we've been off the air for a few days, been catching up on a lot of work and writing that I've been behind on with all my traveling and speaking. And I don't know what the right word for it, what word for it is, but just dealing with what's going on with the media around the world. I've done so many interviews, and I've responded to so many articles around the world that have been, in effect, lies about the Tehran conference and lies about what I stand for and really what the men who sponsored this conference stand for and what the participants, the scholars who were at this conference stood for. For instance, I keep reading again and again and again how these scholars were discredited scholars. Well, not really. I mean, we had Robert Farrison, who was a professor of classics. He was never discredited for his work in classics as a professor. He was an expert in comparative literature and finding the flaws in false documents and this type of thing. And he was never discredited for that. He was discredited because he dared to have a different opinion about what is commonly referred to as the Holocaust. And many other scholars at this conference were respected scholars from all over the world. And it's just amazing how that the media was so lied about this conference and so lied about the work. Well, let me go ahead and give you my answer, Alan. And here's the answer that all of you, I think, will get something out of. I think all of you will learn something from this response. Dear Alan, we still have Christmas trees at the White House, but for heaven's sake, no crosses are allowed. Menorahs are, of course, perfectly acceptable. The one thing I would bring to your attention is that Zionism is simply a political and social expression of Judaism. Judaism is at its core a racial supremacist religion espousing contempt and hatred for non-Jews. It has long predated Zionism, and Zionism wouldn't exist without Judaism. Read the chapter, The Roots of Jewish Supremacism, from My Awakening, or from Jewish Supremacism itself, my book. Even though some Zionists are non-religious, racial Judaism is at the very core of Zionism. Hanukkah and the menorah symbolize Jewish separatism. Hanukkah is celebrated as the Jewish holy day representing resistance against Jewish assimilation with the Greeks and Syrians, a people who were tolerant and kind to the Jewish people. And you know, that was their problem. Because they were tolerant, Jewish extremists saw them as a danger because they accepted the Jewish people, they treated them as equals, and they would even intermarry with them freely. Radical Jewish elements fomented war and murder against the Greeks to prevent the assimilation from occurring. Hanukkah is itself a celebration of the recapture of the temple and of an accompanying massacre of the non-Jews there, and you can find this written about in many mainstream Jewish websites. How is it that when leaders such as Bush and Blair, who are always touting the joys of multiculturalism, assimilation, and tolerance, while simultaneously condemning any sort of ethnic separatism, make a big show about celebrating Jewish celebrations of resistance to assimilation and a resulting ethnic massacre of Greeks? How would the media treat a modern German chancellor who would have a celebration for alleged Nazi massacres of Jews so as to prevent assimilation of the German people with them? It's too ludicrous even to consider the possibility of such an event. Isn't it just as ludicrous that our leaders would celebrate Jewish supremacist war and massacre against non-Jews? Because that is exactly what Hanukkah is. And by the way, it is a perfect opposite of the spirit of Christmas, which is about peace on earth and love for all and Christ coming for all mankind. So when Bush and other leaders celebrate Hanukkah, they're literally celebrating Jewish supremacism. They're celebrating ethnic chauvinism. They're celebrating a Jewish war, victory, and massacre of non-Jews. And they're celebrating Jewish racial and religious intolerance. Interesting, isn't it? The fact that this is never exposed in the mass media of America or Europe is itself evidence of the incredible Jewish information over our entire information processes. They dominate the media, and they don't allow any frank discussion, any honest discussion of this issue. Sincerely, David Duke. P.S. I will publish your letter and my response on my website, and I can already hear the howls from the Jewish extremists already about my writing on this issue. But frankly, they have not, and they will not, offer any evidence proving or showing that what I say here is wrong. Perhaps new readers can use the clear hypocrisy of this one little issue to begin to open the door of understanding on the Jewish question. Well, that's the end of my letter, and let me tell you something. It's just amazing. I do love the internet, because the internet enables us to bypass the mass media. And a very good friend of mine, Curtis Maynard, wrote a recent piece showing how that the main websites of things like Fox News and New York Times are going down. Major Jewish publications like the New York Times are becoming weaker, and more people are getting their information from independent sources. People are making their own minds up on the major and important issues of the day. And I think that's really important and vital, and it's great that we can have this website. And just because of my, in fact, just because of my interview with Wolf Blitzer, an interview which I think, you know, I did well enough, just because of that, many thousands, tens of thousands, in fact, hundreds of thousands of people around the world have come to my website, and they'll read these words, and they'll read this letter and the response that I made to Alan at UCLA. And I think that's going to make an impact, and we will continue to make an impact. I see the change coming around the world. Now, let me tell you what happened since I published this letter on my website. I've gotten now around 50, yeah, I think it's closer to 60, I'm getting more every minute, referring to this article and discussing with me how this article has opened their eyes to something they see every day. They've always heard about Hanukkah, but they never realized what Hanukkah was about. And they didn't realize that Hanukkah is a Jewish celebration against assimilation. I had many people write me and say, you know, it's amazing. Blair and Bush are always talking about the need for people to assimilate, and we have to assimilate in our society, we have to have multiculturalism, and we have to all work together and not have these divisions in society and be one. And yet here they are with the pictures that I show on my website, lighting menorahs, symbolizing the miracle of Hanukkah and the Jewish celebration of Hanukkah, which is a symbol of Jewish resistance to assimilation. It's about Jewish intolerance. And it's actually a celebration of a victory and a massacre against the Greek people in the Holy Land. So that's interesting. And people are opening their eyes. And the truth cannot be denied. Well, they can deny it. They can argue against it. They can try to refute it. But usually that's not what they do. The normal task is not to try to refute or argue with our side. They simply try to ignore us. They don't have any discussion. You can go to Jewish websites where they talk about how that assimilation is a danger as terrible as Nazi genocide. I mean, that's their words. It's a genocide of the National Socialists and Haman. Their great celebration of Purim is one of those celebrations. Purim is where they celebrate rising up and killing Haman, his 12 sons, and tens of thousands of Persians who they claim were going to exterminate them. They just struck first. That's at least their version of Purim. And they'll say that, you know, the Greeks posed just as serious a threat to the Jewish people as the Persians, because the Greeks treated them decently, because the Greeks accepted them and were assimilating with them. The Greeks had a very universalistic view toward the world, and they were accepting them. And they look at that, and they still say this is a destruction of the Jewish people. Now, I don't mind the fact that the Jews want to preserve their particular genetic and cultural and traditional heritage. There's nothing wrong with that. But there is something wrong with it when Jews can pursue their heritage. But if a Palestinian tries to protect his heritage or his homeland, he's called an anti-Semite. If a European tries to do it, he's called a racist. And we can go on and on. The hypocrisies are rife in this instance. And I believe that this one little article read by people tends to open the minds of people. You open the window a little bit. It's kind of like in a very hot room in winter. And you can open just a crack of one of the windows of the doors. And just in a few moments, the room, you can feel this breath of fresh air on you. And we're continuing to open the windows of so many people's minds in the United States, in Canada, in Europe, and truly all over the world as to this tremendous hypocrisy that's going on with Zionism and Judaism. And we've got to get to the root of it. I really suggest that you also go to my website and read The Roots of Jewish Supremacism. You can read that chapter directly from My Awakening. It's available for you to read free. And I hope that all of you will order and read my books. And you can also get a downloadable copy of Jewish Supremacism. I now have Jewish Supremacism in an audio format. It's done in MP3. Now, most CD players will play MP3 today. And that's the only way we can get such a large file. It's about 18 to 20 hours of spoken word where I actually speak an audio version of the book Jewish Supremacism. It's from start to finish. You can play it in your car. You can take it and convert it to your iPod. You can put it on a CD. You can do whatever you want to with this. You can download it from my website. I would suggest you have a high-speed connection in order to get this book on download. But it's an audio book, and on one CD, you'll be able to listen to 20 hours, almost 20 hours, of spoken word on Jewish supremacism. I think it'll be an education for you. I think it'll be interesting, and I think it will help educate those who have questions about this issue. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for being with me. I hope that you had a great holiday, a very meaningful Christmas, and I hope and I believe deep in my heart that we will have a good year this year, because every year of the recent years in my memory, every year has been a year of greater understanding in this question. There's an undercurrent. A friend of mine mentioned it the other day. He said, you know, just 6 weeks before the fall of the Berlin Wall and the German Democratic Republic, you know, the communist East German Republic, that 6 weeks, nobody could have guessed what would have happened. And I believe truly that we are having an undercurrent across Europe and across the world, and things are changing. Things are truly changing. We have to continue to help people change. Not change their basic spirit, but simply open their minds to a new reality. Crack open that window or that door and let them breathe some fresh air of truth. I want to make one more comment before I get off the air today, and we'll have a 20-minute show today. And that's a good example on the Holocaust. As you know, I take no hard position on the Holocaust, but I think the intelligence and the academic reason of the scholars who have some questions about the Holocaust are definitely revealed in the news articles that I read about the Holocaust every day. I just read an article, for instance, by a Catholic bishop, I believe, who said, well, obviously the Holocaust is true. He toured Auschwitz and he saw the machinery of mass murder. But the fact is that David Irving brought this out in Austria, that the man who's the curator of the Auschwitz concentration camp show today, and it is a show, it's like Madame Tussaud's House of Horrors, really. He admitted on video, in fact, to a Jewish researcher at the time, David Cole, he admitted that the so-called gas chambers were not the gas chambers where Jews were killed. In other words, he admitted that these were constructed and built after the war, and yet this bishop and so many millions, perhaps 25 million people now have seen these things, and they say, yes, I know the gas chambers existed because I've seen them. But actually, what they've seen have been reconstructions. They've been built, fabrications, creations built after the war. They're not authentic, even though they're said to be authentic. Another example, I've read many articles about this whole issue, and they show these terrible piles of emaciated bodies, something that's tragic and horrible, and the effects of war. And people say, yes, we know that this plan to exterminate all the Jews existed. We've seen the photos. In fact, I've had many people send me around the world, especially Jewish people, and also some Gentiles who believe everything about the Holocaust story exactly as it's presented. Of course, you don't know exactly what that is because it changes from time to time and year to year. And the official line has changed greatly. The official line originally was that Auschwitz killed 4.4 million Jews. Now the official line is at the camp anyway, that it's 1.1 million. And then you had a leading Holocaust researcher, Prusak, say that it could be as low as 400,000. That's a big difference. It's a huge difference. Now, some people can argue that it doesn't make any difference what the numbers are. But, ladies and gentlemen, if numbers can be changed that greatly, what if the numbers are reduced even more? And what are the deaths? What caused the deaths? That's all a big question. But when they send a picture of these extremely emaciated bodies, and these bodies are enough to arouse the emotion of any person, and maybe that's one thing that stops our intellectual questioning, or any sort of we become emotionally committed to the Holocaust because we see these horrible pictures of human death and suffering, and it has to touch the heart of any human being. It's touched my heart, certainly, and it touches my heart to see dead or dying or suffering humans of any kind, of any nation, of any heritage, anywhere in the world. But you see these terribly emaciated bodies, and you look at them, and they're practically skin and bone, if not even that. And you realize something, that these people have been sick. Typhus was the disease that ravaged Europe, and there were other diseases as well. And typhus is the disease where you waste away, where you lose weight and lose weight and you lose weight and you lose weight, and you eventually die. If you look at those pictures carefully, and this is a grisly task for you, you know, ask yourself the question, could those people have even walked? One of the pictures they show you, could they have even walked to a so-called gas chamber? They're showing you pictures of people who died. You know, they're not proving by those pictures that there was a program of mass murder against the Jews. But these are the kinds of arguments that they use. And it's up to you to make up your own mind whether these programs existed. The only way you can dwell and you can find the truth is by looking at both sides, by having an open mind and allowing researchers to say what they will and offer the ideas and the facts that they will. You know, the most famous victim of the Second World War, as far as the Jewish victims of the so-called Holocaust, were, of course, Anne Frank and her family. Her mother and sister died. But in their own histories and biographies, it's admitted that they did not die in a gas chamber. They died of typhus. The other most famous victims are Elie Wiesel, who wrote a book called Night, where he makes in the early 50s, I think 52, before the world decided on exactly the way the so-called murder weapon of the National Socialists. He wrote a book in 1952. And there's not one mention of any gas chambers. Another thing you hear about very commonly in the media, you say, well, it's proof. Look, here's crematoria. In fact, one person sent me pictures of a crematoria or oven and some bones in them. Well, ladies and gentlemen, every city of any size in the United States of America has crematorium in it, where bodies, where they die from whatever, are cremated. Showing a picture of an oven, or no matter how grisly you might want it, you can open the doors and show some remains of some bones, is no prima facie proof of the Holocaust as is commonly presented. Do you see how they work? They don't argue. They don't argue and say, here's the orders that Adolf Hitler sent out, because they can't find any orders. They don't argue that. You see? And then you have things like the Red Cross, ladies and gentlemen. The Red Cross, an international body, including Americans, British, French, all over the world, the Germans allowed them to enter and inspect every one of the German concentration camps during the entire war, including Auschwitz. The President of the United States asked the Red Cross, in fact, asked them specifically to check out rumors of exterminations. The Red Cross officials informed all their agents. By the way, they interviewed literally millions of people in these camps. They gave 2.4 million packages of parcels and letters to the inmates. They interviewed them just as social workers go into prisons today. And yet, they came back to the President of the United States, and this is a common fact. They came back to the President of the United States and said, we see no evidence of a purposeful extermination program. We see evidence of disease. We see evidence of harm. And again, so the questions arise. There's many questions, but they don't address the questions. And that's why the Holocaust Conference was important, because these questions were addressed. One question that I heard at the conference is, some revisionists said, well, okay, if the Germans were truly having a program of extermination, if they were doing this, why in the world would they let the Red Cross come in and inspect these camps? If you had a situation where you were killing thousands of people a day in this massive operation, mountains of coke which would be required to cremate the bodies, gas chambers, mass lines, would you let people come in from other countries, antagonists in fact of yours, and interview the prisoners and inspect these camps and go through these camps? Or would you not allow that to try to cover it up or to hide it? If you were having disease problems in the camps because of lack of food and lack of transportation, you wouldn't worry about the Red Cross coming in, would you? These were questions that are asked, and they're legitimate questions. And you have to decide whether these are legitimate or not. I don't take a position on it. I speak and lecture across Europe, you know, and I want to continue to be free. And I've got to do what I've got to do. I can tell you what some of the revisionists say. I can argue, but I'm not going to take a position on this thing. I can't take a position and do what I do. And, you know, and the truth is, I'll tell you the truth about it. I don't know ultimately what the historical answer is. I think there's got to be a lot more research. And I think that as soon as I'm able to hear every point of view freely, I can make a better decision about what happened. And I think it's vital that we have truly an inquiry on this issue, and we get at the truth, whatever it may be. And the people who put out the primary line may, in fact, may be absolutely correct. And the people who contest some of the revisions, they may be correct. But you can't know the answers or the truth until you allow people freedom of speech and freedom of press. You probably have never heard a reason why you see skeletal or very emaciated bodies as proof of the Holocaust, or how they show the crematoria as proof of the Holocaust. These aren't proofs of the Holocaust story as such. What they are is pictures of people who died for one reason or another. It could have been a purposeful program of extermination. It may have been something else. It depends. Your decision about that will come from an examination of all the facts. But these pictures they show are no proof of anything but the fact that people died. And we do know people died, and I do believe certainly there were terrible atrocities against Jews and other people in the war, and I believe there were terrible atrocities by the Allies as well in this war. Nagasaki and Hiroshima burning to death over 200,000 primarily women and children in their homes. I mean, babies burned alive. Or Dresden, Germany, and the bombing campaigns we had, or the dislocation and murder of between 7 and 11 million Germans in Middle Germany and East Prussia, part of the German nation for thousands of years. That dislocation, ethnic cleansing, murder and rape was a great crime, ladies and gentlemen. Our treatment of many of the German prisoners after the end of the war, we can document that. That was a great crime. Hundreds of thousands of Germans died in our captivity, German soldiers, after the end of hostilities in that war. Read the book by Mr. Backe. There, so, ladies and gentlemen, the only way we can know about the truth on any of these issues is simply by freedom of speech and freedom of inquiry, freedom of conscience, And the idea that people should be put in jail or prison for expressing their opinion is against every principle of freedom and justice. This has been David Duke. I appreciate very much your listenership, and I hope to be with you again tomorrow. Bye-bye now.